General aviation airports play a pivotal role in society. GAMA is praising the reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank and ratcheting up enforcement against those who play with lasers. This is Aero News for Thursday, May 17, 2012. I'm Glenn Moyer. The FAA has released a report called General Aviation Airports, a National Asset, which was compiled following an 18-month study to capture the many diverse functions of general aviation airports. As a result, the agency says the general public will have a better understanding of general aviation airports in the community and within the national air transportation system. This in-depth analysis highlights the pivotal role GA airports play in our society, our economy, and the entire aviation system. The FAA has conducted previous commercial service airport studies and now has analyzed both aviation segments with the completion of this GA study. The report is designed to help the FAA, state aeronautical agencies, and airport sponsors make planning decisions. The FAA plans to further study some GA airports to better understand their role. The FAA will begin working in the fall of this year with airport sponsors and state aeronautic divisions to identify the activities of some 497 selected airports to see how they serve the public interest. Earlier this week, the Senate passed House Resolution 2072. That's the reauthorization of the Export-Import Bank, and the General Aviation Manufacturers Association couldn't be happier. The bipartisan legislation, already approved by the House, extends the bank's charter into 2014 and grows its authorized lending cap to $140 billion. The reauthorization comes immediately after the bank announced a new credit process to facilitate and expedite the bank's financing for business aircraft and helicopters. The announcement was made at the European Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition, EBACE, which was held in Geneva, Switzerland, that we've been talking about this week. GAMA's president and CEO, Pete Bunce, called the development great news for thousands of general aviation manufacturing workers. The FAA has adopted a new get-tough policy against those who deliberately point lasers at aircraft, instructing its investigators to seek the toughest possible penalties against those who endanger the flying public. The number of reported laser incidents have increased steadily since the FAA created a formal reporting system in 2005. The FAA has initiated enforcement action against 28 people charged with aiming a laser device at an aircraft since June 2011 and has opened investigations against dozens more. The maximum civil penalty for one laser strike is $11,000, and the FAA has proposed civil penalties against individuals for multiple laser incidents, with $30,800 being the highest penalty proposed to date. Violators who are pilots or mechanics could face revocation of their FAA certificates as well as those civil penalties. Local, state, and federal prosecutors also have sentenced laser violators to jail time, community service, probation, and additional financial penalties for court cost and restitution. We should remind that pointing a laser device at an aircraft is also a federal crime, and convictions can mean up to $250,000 in fines and as many as 20 years in jail. Coincidentally, Utah police are currently looking for suspects after green lasers were pointed at two airborne aircraft landing at Salt Lake City International Airport last week. USA Today reports the first incident involved a Southwest Boeing 737 flying at 9,500 feet above the ground, while the second incident involved a Learjet at 6,000 feet just 12 minutes later. Authorities say the incidents happened last Thursday. Airbus's ACJ-318 and ACJ-319 corporate jets have gained eligibility from the FAA, EASA, and CAGA for Part 135 operations, making it easier for operators to seek and obtain approval to carry fare-paying charter passengers. Typically, charter operators must undergo a more demanding approval process, similar to Part 121, the more comprehensive process required for airline approval. The simpler requirements of Part 135 recognize that business jet operators typically carry fewer passengers, fly less frequently, and operate in a less demanding environment. Well, things are definitely on the rise at Nextant Aerospace. The company just announced that it has delivered the 10th production 400XT just 7 months after receiving FAA certification. The company says it plans to deliver 32 aircraft by the end of this year. And Nextant officials have confirmed their acquisition of a larger remanufacturing facility for the 400XT at Cleveland's Cuyahoga County Airport. The new facility will quadruple Nexton's current square footage, both in terms of production area and office space, while accommodating an annual production rate of 48 aircraft. The Nexton 400 XT is the world's only FAA-certified remanufactured business jet. When Aero News continues, Boeing hopes to triple its 787 production rate. The numbers say eBase was a winner, and Googling Google.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Aero News continues now for Thursday, May 17th. I'm Glenn Moyer. With over 850 orders on the books for the new 787 Dreamliner, Boeing needs to speed up its production process. At present, they are completing just 3.5 aircraft per month, but hope to increase that to 10. Industry observers doubt that it can be done, but Boeing says the plan is to double production in Seattle to 7 per month, while adding another 3 from the recently activated South Carolina production line. Raising the production rate would not only fill those orders faster, it would generate revenue needed to fund development of the 737 MAX and other programs at Boeing. We've spoken a lot these past few days about the 12th Annual European Business Aviation Convention and Exhibition, or EBACE, held in Geneva, and now the organizers say that by any measure, the show was a success. As the third and final day of the show concluded, 12,638 attendees had participated, representing 99 countries, both numbers on par with last year's show. Additionally, 491 exhibitors were on hand, occupying a record-breaking 2,280 booth spaces. Furthermore, EBACE 2012 featured 60 aircraft on its static display of aircraft with a 10% increase in ramp space, making it the largest ever EBACE static display. Well, nowadays, if you want to find information about almost any subject under the sun, you simply Google it. That is, search the internet using the popular search engine Google. But what if the subject you want to know about is Google itself? Well, that's the case with Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, who wants to know if Google is getting a sweetheart deal on the use of NASA's Moffett Field to house its fleet of corporate aircraft. Google reportedly pays $3.7 million annually for the use of 42 acres at Moffett Field to house its fleet of jets and helicopters. NASA's rule is if the aircraft are used for scientific missions, then they can lease the space. However, an investigation by NBC San Diego revealed that the 6 aircraft have flown only 52 of these scientific missions since 2007, out of approximately 1,039 total flights. Conveniently, NASA regulations don't specify how many flights must be of a scientific nature to satisfy the lease rule. The senator is asking how many planes at the field are owned by Google, what kind of planes they are, what arrangements are in place for fueling the aircraft, and he wants to see all contracts and other documents that define the arrangement. He is asked to see flight plans and passenger manifests for all of the Google-owned aircraft at the field. Grassley expects a response from NASA by May 25th. Well, our friends at TSA are at it once again. This time, it was Nobel Peace Prize winner and former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, who was subjected to a full TSA pat-down before being allowed to board a flight from New York to Toronto. Never mind that he's now 88 years old and was in a wheelchair, or that TSA is allegedly testing a program that allows those 75 and older to keep their shoes and jackets on while going through screening. An obvious nod to the fact that few little old ladies with blue hair and tennis shoes have proven to be terrorists. Well, worse still, we're talking about the man who helped bring an end to one of the world's most painful and controversial conflicts, the Vietnam War. And the TSA screener didn't recognize him, even after asking his name. Maybe it's time TSA expand its pre-employment screening test and check and see if their agents ever passed a basic civics or American history course while they were in school. Finally, we tip our hat to flight attendants everywhere. It was 82 years ago this week, this past Tuesday, as a matter of fact, on May 15th, 1930, when Ellen Church became the first flight attendant to be hired by an airline. Church was a registered nurse, but even back then, they were called Sky Girls. In the 1960s, there were those wild glamour girl days of coffee, tea, or me. And today, a flight attendant is recognized as a first responder safety official and is as likely to be male as female. Yes, we've come a long way, baby, from the days when Pan Am's stewardesses had to pass a girdle check before boarding the planes, to today when only the elderly are given the dignity of keeping their shoes on before boarding an aircraft. It's no wonder we used to call them the friendly skies. I'm Glenn Moyer. As always, we thank you for listening and invite you to tell your friends about our daily AeroCast. Until next time, you're now cleared for departure.